Russian lawyer Sergei Magnitsky spent almost a year in jail on charges he said were trumped up, but it wasn't until his death last month that his case became a Russian media sensation. As it turned out, Mr. Magnitsky was keeping a record of his treatment in jail, and his letters detailing the harsh conditions of his imprisonment were published, provoking outrage throughout Russia. Joining me now is Washington Post foreign correspondent Philip P. Pan. He's been covering the Magnitsky case for months, and I'm pleased to welcome him to our show today. Hi.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
Why was Sergei Magnitsky put in jail?
Well, he had basically uncovered a massive theft from the government while working for one of his clients. Apparently, a group of police officials and the Secret Service officials had stolen more than $500 million from the government, and he happened across it while defending one of his clients. When he complained about it, they put him in prison.
And so was he ever charged with a crime?
Yes, he was charged with a tax evasion case from several years ago that actually that had been investigated previously and they had been cleared of. From all signs, it seemed like a trumped-up charge with really no substance to it.
So he was really being punished for being a whistleblower.
Exactly.
Why did Hermitage Capital Management, which was at one point the largest foreign investor in the Russian stock market, hire the law firm that Magnitsky worked for?
Well, he worked for an American law firm that was based in Moscow, and they were the corporate counsel for Hermitage Capital. They handled their taxes, they handled their their regular legal work. He wasn't any sort of a special investigator of any type. He was just a normal lawyer working for a client, and just in the course of that work, he happened across this really extraordinary fraud that was committed by members of the police forces.
He collected evidence that implicated the Interior Ministry officials in stealing more than $230 million in government funds. That's a lot of money. And the Russian...
What was interesting about it is what they did is they stole, they basically took control of his client's company and then bankrupted it and used that to apply for a tax refund. And so the $230 million was stolen in the form of a tax refund that was issued within 3 days. And, according to Russian lawyers, that's just unheard of for a tax refund to be issued so quickly, even if at all in Russia.
Now, the Russian authorities did confirm that the theft of government funds had occurred. What's happened to the Interior Ministry officials who were implicated?
Well, nothing's happened to the officials who have been implicated. They confirmed that the funds were stolen, but they blamed the entire theft on a convicted killer whose name happened to appear in some of the documents. So there's really been no full investigation yet of the official involvement in this theft. And this is what Mr. Magnitsky was complaining about when he was put in prison.
Well, the other key figure here is a man named William F. Broder. It doesn't sound like a Russian name.
No, he's American-born. He's a British citizen now. He was the president and chief executive of Hermitage Capital, which was at one time the largest foreign investor in the Russian stock market. Basically, his method for making money in Russia was to try—he invested in state companies and then try to expose corruption in these companies, which would force the value of these companies up when the corruption was cleaned up. And apparently, he'd done this a little bit—he'd gone a little bit too far and angered somebody in the government.
But he had expressed his support of then-President Vladimir Putin's decision to arrest the oil tycoon Mikhail Khodorkovsky back in 2003— and I would have thought that would have put him in good stead.
I think many people thought that. And in fact, he was really one of the biggest cheerleaders for Russia as an investment vehicle for foreigners. So when in 2005, when he was suddenly denied a visa, it was quite a surprise. And it basically meant that his investigations into corruption in state companies had gone too far and that even Mr. Putin must have been displeased.
So he was banned from Russia after he lost his visa?
He was banned from Russia. He pulled out all his investments in Russia. What he left behind were these shell companies, and these were the companies that the police officials used to get that big tax refund.
Did Magnitsky ever know that he was in danger before he was arrested?
You know, there several lawyers worked on his case. He wasn't the only one. Most of them fled the country as it became clear how serious this matter was becoming. Mr. Magnitsky refused to go. He believed that, you know, that he was in the right, that he hadn't done anything wrong, and he was just pointing out a problem that the authorities should investigate. And he really didn't think he was in any trouble. And even despite, you know, some urging by some members of the Hermitage Capital for him to leave the country, he just felt he was safe. He had some faith in the legal system there.
My guest is Philip P. Pan of The Washington Post, foreign correspondent with The Washington Post. We're talking about the death of Sergei Magnitsky and the fallout from that on today's Underreported. This is WNYC, WNYC.org. I'm Leonard Lopate. How much is known in the country about how Russian prisoners are treated?
Well, there's some information about it. It's to be honest, you know, because the media is fairly controlled by the state. There are some independent outlets, but largely it's controlled by the state. This type of critical reporting isn't very common. So in terms of the kind of documentation that Mr. Magnitsky left behind after his death, you know, that, according to Russian journalists, that was quite unprecedented in modern Russian history.
Were the prison officials even aware that he was writing these letters and recording his treatment?
Sure, this was all written down. It had to be passed through, his letters in any case, had to be passed through prison censors. Everything he wrote in terms of many of these abuses he recorded in petitions that he filed with the court, that his lawyers filed in public, that were available to the media. But throughout this period, you know, no one really paid attention to it until he passed away.
What did his letters describe?
Basically, his treatment got worse and worse over time, and he attributed it to his refusal to cooperate with the police. The police were pressuring him to confess, pressuring him to implicate Mr. Browder, and he refused to do that. And according to his own notes, he says that each time he refused, they would transfer him to another cell that was even worse than the one before. And so he had a situation where, you know, these are cells that were reeking of sewage, that sometimes had no windows, sometimes had windows that were open to the cold. He was denied hot water. And most importantly, he was denied medical treatment. He had been diagnosed by a prison doctor with a condition of the pancreas and the gallbladder. And one of the doctors had even recommended surgery. And he was abruptly transferred away from that facility with those doctors into other facilities where doctors refused to treat him at all.
And hadn't he even been denied his request to see his wife and children during his detention?
That's right. He was not allowed to see his wife and children. His mother was, I believe, allowed to visit him only once. And throughout this period, he's complaining about it in public. And basically, his pleas were ignored. Which is one reason why this case is so tragic.
Well, Hermitage Capital Management was working for his release and sent appeals to President Medvedev and more than a dozen cabinet ministers. Did any of these officials ever respond?
No, none of them responded. This is one thing that's so eerie about this case, that you had a situation where, you know, more than $230 million, more than $500 million, really, had gone missing from the Treasury, and not one politician, not one senior official would comment on it. You could imagine in the United States if that type of money disappeared, it would be a huge uproar. But in Russia, no one wanted to touch it, and because everyone knew that the FSB, which is the successor to the KGB, was involved, and that's how powerful that agency is in Russia today.
Sergei Magnitsky died on November 16th. What was the official cause of death?
Officially, the cause that's come out now, they're saying he died of heart failure. On the morning after his death, the authorities initially informed his lawyers that he had died of a toxic shock caused by failure of his pancreas and other organs, which would implicate the prison system for not treating those diseases. Later on, they changed that to just heart failure. And there was never an independent autopsy done. It was just not permitted.
Well, you said that the media totally ignored all of his complaints, hadn't followed his case when he was in jail. What happened after? Why did this suddenly become a big issue, especially in a country where the press is so tightly controlled?
Well, I think the case struck a nerve. I mean, the death was unexpected. When he was alive, one reason the media never really covered the case as aggressively as it could have was because of the involvement with Mr. Browder and Hermitage Capital. That these are, you know, big foreign investors that that the culture in Russia is basically suspicious of. There were some suspicions that maybe these guys were guilty of the tax evasion, and so that maybe this Mr. Magnitsky wasn't an innocent victim. But when he died, people, regardless of his innocence, felt, well, this is one step too far, and they finally took a look at his notes, at his letters, and they were stunned to find this record of treatment that really recalled, as many people pointed out, that really recalled the Gulag under Stalin. And this was the first time they had seen any of this type of documentation of prison abuses since Stalin's time, according to many journalists.
Well, actually, the harsh prisons in Russia go back even earlier to the Tsars.
Okay.
Did the Russian people think that those days were over?
I think that many people would have liked to have believed it was over. I think if you ask many people, no one's eager to return to the prisons. But I think having it in black and white, confronting them like this from a man, you know, who's a father of two, who's 37 years old, who went in healthy, who's a professional, who's educated, I think this really bothered the country. And to be honest, it was a surprise both to Hermitage Capital and to Mr. Magnitsky's family and to myself that after his death, the case got as much attention as it did. Many people just felt that the Russian society was just so cynical that they wouldn't pay attention to something like this anymore. So, it was sort of surprising and a positive that this type of attention came forward.
How has the government responded?
Well, the government has been forced to respond to the public outrage. Mr. Medvedev, the president, has ordered an investigation. One of the senior prison officials has already acknowledged that there were violations. The Interior Ministry, which rarely addresses these types of allegations, decided to hold a news conference to sort of defend its behavior during this whole saga. What's interesting is that the president, the government, they can order an investigation into the prison abuses, but no one still to this day seems to have the courage to order an investigation into the actual corruption, into the actual crimes that Mr. Magnitsky had exposed.
Well, a Russian prison official did admit after his death that the harsh conditions may have contributed to his death. Isn't that kind of acknowledgement a bit unusual?
Yes, I think that is fairly unusual and very unusual to happen so quickly. I think it's a sign that there are people in the government who aren't sure how to behave now. When Mr. Medvedev, the president, ordered this investigation, I think that took some of these so-called the security ministries by surprise. And I think some people are trying to take cover because they're not sure how this investigation is going to unfold.
Well, apparently Magnitsky's body was buried before an autopsy was performed. So they were expecting this whole thing to go relatively unnoticed.
Yes, I think that's what they were expecting. I think that it's still possible that the people who got away, it's still very likely that the people who are responsible both for the theft and ultimately for Mr. Magnitsky's death, I think it's still very likely that they are going to get away with it. There has been a lot of media attention, but whether that is enough in the Russian political system to force politicians to tackle, to take on a powerful ministry like the FSB is not clear, and I think unlikely.
Well, sources within the government said in early October that they would issue an arrest warrant for Browder for tax evasion. Has that been dropped in light of the Magnitsky case?
No. In fact, at the Interior Ministry press conference, they were promising to pursue that. They haven't yet. But I think what you might be seeing is an attempt to scapegoat Hermitage Capital, to attempt to blame this company for stealing that money that disappeared from the government. They need to find a more credible scapegoat than the convicted killer. And I think the plan appears to be shaping up from court documents that we've seen is to try to blame the foreign company. Now, logically, it would be very difficult to prove because Hermitage Capital complained about this theft before it even occurred. I mean, they complained that their companies had been taken control of by police officials several days before that tax refund was issued. So it doesn't make any sense that they would have been involved. So it's not clear whether this type of defense strategy by the security ministries is going to fly with the public.
But how effective has stirring up anti-foreign sentiment been in situations like this?
It's not simply anti-foreign sentiment. It's also a sort of oligarchs, anti-rich sentiment in Russia. There's a sense that everyone who made profits in the 90s did so illegally, and no one is clean. And it's been effective in the past. You mentioned the oil tycoon, Mr. Khodorkovsky. This is one reason why the government was able to get away with seizing his oil company and putting him in prison, because this tremendous public resentment against the very few individuals who really profited during the 1990s and became huge billionaires.
Well, obviously, people in the FSB have become very rich as a result of this. There's not similar sentiment against them?
There is, but they're not as public about their riches as these businessmen. The members of the FSB, we assume, who have stolen all this money, they keep their money overseas in Swiss bank accounts and such, and it's not clear who they are and how much they've taken it. And so I think there is public suspicion of these agencies, but there is not yet, there's not the depth of public anger against them as there are against the oligarchs.
Do you think that this could lead to some kind of reform?
I think it's difficult to say right now. I mean, if I were to bet, I would say no. I think the NGOs, the civil society groups in Russia are hoping that some change comes out of this. They believe that Mr. Medvedev has an opportunity now to take on corruption in a way that he hasn't. You know, he's promised ever since taking office that he would do something about corruption in Russia, which is, you know, really terrible and debilitating the state, really. He's promised to do something about it, but he hasn't. And one reason he hasn't is because he doesn't feel he has the political clout to take on the most corrupt agencies, which are the security agencies. And so now he has the public on his side in some sense, and he could do it if he felt confident enough to. So I think it's an open question whether he's going to do it or not.
Well, I just read recently that Vladimir Putin has been coy about his future plans, and he comes out of the intelligence community. So is he still pulling the strings?
Well, everyone assumes that, and I think it's a fair assumption that Mr. Putin remains the most powerful politician in Russia. And you're right, he is a former director of the FSB, a former KGB official, and this is one reason why the FSB officials can get away with with stealing such amounts of money from the government, is because everyone sees them as protected by Mr. Putin. And Mr. Putin has done nothing yet to sort of apply really any checks on these agencies at all.
Philip P. Pan is foreign correspondent for The Washington Post, and we have a link to his most recent article on this story on our show page at wnyc.org. Thank you so much for talking with us today.
Thanks for having me.